Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into a special Tuesday edition of Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on The Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth in studio this evening alongside Adam Vingan of The Athletic. Adam, how we doing?
Good, Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, just fine. I can't believe that we are essentially a seventh of the way, actually about a sixth of the way through the season. It feels like it just started 2 days ago. And here we are. The Preds have played 9 games, and yes, some other games around the NHL have been postponed, and who knows what that means for the schedule around the league moving forward and whether or not they complete the regular season by the stated date at this time. But this season is moving by at a rapid pace, and I don't know about you, but I am loving what I'm seeing around the NHL with these two-game series, a lot of animosity between these teams because of the two-game series or even three-game series if you're talking about the North Division. Up north of the border, I am absolutely loving the product, even though there is very limited attendance in only some arenas.
Well, first of all, don't make me do fractions. You were talking about 1/6 and 1/7. Don't ask me to do fractions on this show. The second thing is I agree with you that the season has been fun so far, minus, of course, the multiple postponements around the league because of COVID-19. We saw most recently the New Jersey Devils had to suspend play through the rest of the week. They have 10 players on that COVID-19 related absence list, which is an incredible amount. Fortunately, the Predators have not had any issues. They did have that one game postponed against Carolina, but you know, they had no ill effects from playing Carolina the night before, which is good. They're healthy, and at least in terms of COVID-19, there are some injuries on the team, of course. But all that is to say that I think the season so far has been entertaining. I'm trying my best to branch out of the Central Division. It's so easy in this format to just focus on the team that you cover or you like or you watch,
yep.
Versus looking at what else is happening around the league. So I'm making a point to watch games in other divisions, even if those games have no bearing on the Predators whatsoever. There are some good games tonight. We'll talk about a milestone, a Predators-related milestone later in the show. That might be the game I watch. But so far, so good from a scheduling standpoint when it comes to the Predators. Maybe not so much the action on the ice itself.
Yeah, well, Shea Weber skating in his 1,000th NHL game tonight. So congratulations to him. And yes, we will get to the former Predators captain later on in the show. And I have been watching every division. And I, not to go into a tangent here, but the North Division with all the Canadian teams, for me, has been by far the most entertaining.
For sure. The
Calgary-Winnipeg game last night was incredible, and that was the first of a three-game series between those two teams, 3 games in 4 days in the same barn. Like, I cannot wait to watch tonight, coming up at the top of the hour between the Flames and the Jets, and then again Thursday night, you know, while also watching Preds and Panthers. Those games have been a ton of fun, so I'm really enjoying the action early on. But let's get into this Preds two-game set against the Tampa Bay Lightning. When they went down there to Tampa after back-to-back wins against the Blackhawks, didn't really know what to expect out of this Preds team. Can't say I'm surprised by the result, losing 4-3 in regulation on Saturday and then again in regulation last night 5-2. So the Preds come away with 0 points out of the two games against the Lightning. The Lightning, the class of the NHL, they are the defending champs. And at times, throughout both games, Saturday and Monday, Adam, the Lightning were outclassing the Preds. It looked like the gap was extremely wide between the two teams, But it wasn't the whole time. I mean, the Preds did hang in there from time to time, and they pushed the pace in both games, but not until it was too late. But Tampa Bay clearly the better team.
Well, the Predators are a great third period team, especially when they're down by three or four goals entering the third period.
Yes.
I give them credit for not just laying down.
Like we've seen the last couple of years.
Yes. So I will give them some props for being more resilient, showing signs at least of being more resilient. But as you said, they had two wins against the Blackhawks at home, which ultimately they should have won. They are a better team than Chicago on paper. They go to Tampa where, you know, the Predators were, I think, 10-0-3 in their previous 13 games against the Lightning before this two-game series. Now, of course, the Predators are used to playing Tampa twice a season, not eight times a season, because they are in separate conferences, but they had not lost a game in regulation to Tampa since December of 2013. And that clearly did not last after that first game. And it only got worse after the second one, two consecutive regulation losses. And I think we've talked about this on previous installments of Insiders, Ryan, that when you look at the Central Division, there is a clear hierarchy. You have Tampa at the top, the defending Stanley Cup champions. You have Carolina probably right underneath them. Then you might have Dallas, as the Predators saw last week, quite good when they want to be.
Yep.
Then you have the mushy middle, Columbus, Florida, and Nashville. And then you have the bottom feeders, or the expected bottom feeders, Chicago and Detroit. The key is to win as many games as you can, pile up all of the points against the bottom feeders, stay afloat, and try to be over 500 against the other teams in the middle.
The mushy middle.
The mushy middle, as I said. And then just to try to hold your own against the top teams. And so far this season, the Predators have played Tampa, Carolina, and Dallas five times. They are 0-5, specifically 0-5-0. No points against either any of those teams, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
That is not a good look. So as I'm watching this game, these games against Tampa, it is clear to me, and I think we'll get into this a little bit later, unless you want to now, it is clear to me that the Lightning are in a different stratosphere than the Predators. They are in a tier above, maybe even multiple tiers above the Predators. And I don't think that's surprising, but I did not expect those games to get away from them as much as they did in these past two games in Tampa.
So let's start with last night's game, 5-2 loss. They're down 3-0 after one period, and it was supposed to be 2-0. And then Braden Point goes down and scores on a nice little back and forth, jams at home with like 0.3 left on the clock as the puck crosses
the buzzer beater.
Yes, a true buzzer beater for Braden Point. The puck was in the Lightning's defensive zone with 5 seconds left, and somehow they were able to manage to get the puck all the way down ice, score that goal before the clock ran out. Jared Tenorti looked like a fish out of water. Matt Benning didn't look much better, and there's a 2-on-0 right in front of Saros, and honestly, there's not much Saros can really do at that point. And then Point makes it 3-0 Lightning going into the first intermission. The first period last night was not a good look for the Nashville Predators. When you factor in the first goal, which was a pinball goal, again, right in front of Saros, where a lot was happening in a short amount of time, tough to blame Saros for that one, where Ryan Ellis gets caught up ice, bounces don't go their way, and Palat bangs in a loose puck. They make it 2-0 on a play where the Preds in their own zone kind of looked a little bit lost. Yanni Gourde makes it 2-0, and then the play that I just described, Braden Point making it 3-0. How do you describe these slow starts happening almost every single game for this Preds team?
It's hard to say. We are seeing a lot of what we've seen in recent years, where the Predators actually come out and look pretty good in terms of piling up shot attempts and scoring chances. That was not the case in the first game against Tampa. It took their first power play, if I recall correctly, for the Predators to finally get a shot on goal. But we've seen a lot of this so far this season. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ryan, the Predators have allowed the first goal of the game 7 times in 9 games. And when you mix that with the penalty problems and the fact that the penalty kill is unable to get momentum from killing penalties, it's a recipe for disaster. So much energy expended trying to get back in the game, killing penalties. It throws off the rhythm of the bench in terms of certain players who aren't playing on the penalty kill, you know, not being able to get into a rhythm 5-on-5. Mixes together, and the only thing that comes out of it is a recipe for losing. We knew that this team was going to struggle to score. The changes they made this offseason were to become tougher, but they didn't necessarily address becoming more offensive minded. And that was a decision that David Poile, chose to make. It wasn't as if though he went out and got offensive minded players like he has in recent years and they haven't been performing. He went out and got players like Brad Richardson and Mark Borowiecki and Matt Benning, who aren't known for scoring. Now, Luke Cunningham and Eric Halla, have scoring capability. They haven't really done so. Cunningham has 2 goals, but not since the first couple games. Halla has yet to score. We knew that this team was not going to score goals, and they definitely do not have the proverbial firepower to hang with a team like the Tampa Bay Lightning. You watch the Stanley Cup playoffs, you watch the Stanley Cup final, you know how good the Lightning are from top to bottom at all positions. But then you see it against the Predators, and like I said, they are in a different weight class.
Yep.
From Steven Stamkos and Andre Palat to Anthony Cirelli, Braden Point, Mikhail Sergachev, Victor Hedman, Alex Killorn, Patrick Maroon, Tyler Johnson, the Predators cannot match that. And it's clear that, for the Predators to win those games, they were going to have to be tight defensively and get strong goaltending, but they weren't able to get either of those things. And that's why they went 0-2 at Amalie Arena.
So let's start here with the offensive struggles, because I mentioned the first period woes that this team has. They only have 2 goals in the first period, which is dead last in the NHL. But they have 14 goals in the third period, which is 4th in the NHL. So they are getting better throughout the game, but it hasn't been good enough, as they are 4-5 on the season. They're averaging 2.33 goals per game, which is 27th in the league. So they are the 5th worst team at putting the puck in the back of the net so far this season. And something that you were kind of alluding to that became very obvious to me in these last 2 games, and really you can go back to the Chicago series as well, is just how hard this Preds team has to work to get the puck across the goal line. Like, they have to have all these chances and work their tails off just to get 2 or 3 goals on the scoreboard, whereas other teams, including the Lightning, including these dynamic teams across the league, many of them, goals can come almost at will for those teams. But this Preds team, they struggle mightily to score, especially when you have Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson combining for 6 assists and 0 goals through 9 games.
Yeah, it's frankly unacceptable. And look, I at least have noticed Matt Duchene. He has been a menace out there. He's getting the scoring chances. I wrote last week in a story on The Athletic that included this statistic that Matt Duchene led the league in scoring chances among players without a goal this season, according to my friends at SportLogic. I can only imagine in the past week that has grown even, that lead has grown, has expanded. And Ryan Johansson was on that list too. But at least you can look at Matt Duchene's game and see that he's trying to make a difference. Now, I tweeted something to this effect last night. You're being paid $8 million per season on average to score and to produce points. Almost scoring and almost producing points is not going to cut it. But I can at least live somewhat with the fact that Matt Duchene is at least noticeable on the ice. I cannot say the same thing about Ryan Johansson. And this is a recurring problem that may never get solved. You have to consider where these players are in their careers. Ryan Johansson is 28 years old. Matt Duchene just turned 30. They are at the point of their careers where they're approaching the downturn. You know, they're exiting their prime years. Oftentimes players don't improve after exiting their prime years. So if this is what Ryan Johansson is at 28, I have a hard time believing that he's going to get better at 29, at 30, at 31, et cetera. I don't know what it's going to take to find the Ryan Johansson that was such a force during the 2017 playoffs before he had that freak injury, or even to a lesser extent, the Ryan Johansson we've seen in some past postseasons, including the very brief Edmonton bubble appearance during the summertime. I don't know what it's going to take to coax that Ryan Johansson during the regular out of himself during the regular season.
Well, I mean, even two seasons ago, Ryan Johansson had 50 assists. Now he's not even playing at a 50 point pace.
It's hard to believe. And I really don't have an answer. And even Ryan, thinking about last season, you know, had a hard time putting his finger on what was different. And I don't necessarily, and I think Robbie talked about this on the morning show today, I am not someone who subscribes to the theory that he got paid and now he's lazy. I do not like using the word lazy or synonyms of lazy to describe professional athletes, because to become a professional athlete, you cannot be lazy.
Sure.
And so I don't like this. It's the thing that's always held Ryan Johansson back, I think, in the eyes of Predators fans, is that he's an easygoing guy, and on the ice he can look aloof. You know, he doesn't skate like the wind, so sometimes it looks like he's skating in quicksand to some people who are looking for a reason not to like Ryan Johansson. And this is just a long-winded way of saying that it's put up or shut up time for those two, but especially Ryan Johansson. At least Matt Duchene can say, I'm getting the chances, I'm trying, I'm around the net every night, I'm doing what I can to make a difference. Not to say that Ryan Johansson isn't trying, but it's nowhere near as obvious as it is with Matt Duchene. So I could at least give Matt Duchene the benefit of the doubt somewhat. I have no such benefit of the doubt for Ryan Johansson.
I made this comparison this morning on Robbie and Rexroad as we were all talking about Ryan Johansson, and that is the current state of Ryan Johansson feels like what it was like with Colin Wilson towards the end of his Preds tenure, where you knew what you were getting out of Colin Wilson in the playoffs, but you also knew what you were getting out of Colin Wilson in the regular season, and they were two different things. And I at this point, kind of feel like it's we're all just kind of trying to hope it into existence that the playoff version of Ryan Johansson is going to magically appear in the regular season, when the body of work is proof that it's just not going to happen.
No, I mean, Ryan Johansson, I feel like he almost did himself a disservice by being a goal scorer earlier in his career. And what I mean by that is, you know, he was an all-star near the end of his time in Columbus. I believe his career high is 33 goals, which he scored early in his career. And that's at the expectation that he is capable of being a 30-goal scorer. Ryan Johansson has never been a goal scorer on this team. He hasn't necessarily been expected to be a goal scorer. He has shown himself to be adept at playmaking, which is important too, but he is not a goal scorer. I mean, I think his career high, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Ryan, I think his career high in goals with the Predators over a full season is like 15. And that's what you should expect at the most. I'm pulling up his numbers right now.
You can say the same thing, though, about Duchene, who's had higher goal totals in previous stops, but hasn't been expected to be a goal scorer here. You could have said the same thing about Kyle Turris, where he had higher goal totals as a center. He comes here and not expected to play that role. And I wonder if that's something that Peter Laviolette tried to almost alter the way they think offensively, when their track record at previous stops was putting the puck in the back of the net on average or better than average compared to the average center out there.
Right. And it's at the end of the day, like, here's a preview of an article that I'm going to be writing for The Athletic in the coming days, just to give you a sense of where things are. There are four teams in the NHL that pay their top two centers more money per season in terms of total cap hit than the Predators pay Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene, who combined to take up $16 million in cap space. The Toronto Maple Leafs, the Edmonton Oilers, the Pittsburgh Penguins, and the Washington Capitals. Now think of the top two centers on each of those teams.
Stars.
Austin Matthews, star. John Tavares, star. Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl are first and second in scoring in the NHL. Sidney Crosby is a Hall of Famer. Evgeny Malkin is a Hall of Famer. Nicholas Backstrom is a Hall of Famer. Evgeny Kuznetsov played a role in in the Capitals winning the Stanley Cup in 2018. One of these things is not like the other, as Sesame Street would say, as Big Bird would say. The Predators are paying top dollar to Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene, and they're not meeting those expectations. And to me, I am skeptical that they'll be able to figure it out. And that's a problem. And that's something that this team, this front office, is going to have to think long and hard about this offseason if things don't get better.
So how can this team get going offensively? Are there any solutions within the walls of Bridgestone Arena or Centennial Sportsplex or wherever that can help boost that 2.33 goals per game average that the Preds are clicking at right now? Perhaps there is an in-house solution, and we'll get to that coming up next. He's Adam Vingan. I'm Ryan Porth, and you're listening to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app.
Ryan Ellis with the long clear for Josi on the left wing side. Josi bangs it in. And sent behind the net, trying to get out in front, and the score! And the Predators get on the board here with 2:53 gone in the third.
Ellie Tolvanen. Yep. Finally found his spot. You see the quick release. It's just a play behind the net.
That was how it sounded last night on the Fifth Third Bank Nashville Predators Radio Network, as Ellie Tolvanen scoring his first goal of the season on his first shot of the season. This is Preds Insiders. Ryan Porth and Adam Vingan here with you on this Tuesday evening. The Preds back at it Thursday night for the first of a back-to-back against the Florida Panthers Thursday and Friday nights down in Sunrise. So, Adam, Ellie Tolvanen had been on the taxi squad all season long, and then a situation comes up yesterday where Luke Cunnan and Brad Richardson are both day-to-day with respective injuries, and Ellie Tolvanen gets his opportunity last night, and in the limited time that he saw on the ice, he scores on his first shot. A nice play by Eric Halla behind the net to find Tolvanen, who found some ice where no Lightning player occupied, and he one-timed the puck behind Vasilevsky, proving that his shot is an elite shot. It was kind of an awkward, not every lefty would have been able to one-time that shot, but he did, and it was a really nice goal. Tolvanen made it 4-1 at the time, as the Lightning were up 4-0 before Tolvanen scored that goal. So we were talking last segment, Adam, about the offensive struggles that this Predators team has been facing early on in this season and becoming even more evident down in Tampa Bay. Do you feel like with those struggles and with the fact that Tolvanen scored last night on his first shot, that Tolvanen is going to be getting more opportunities, more ice time than just residing on the taxi squad moving forward?
I mean, I think he should. And what you said is true, Ryan, that Elie Tolvanen is a raw prospect. One thing that I think people tend to forget when we talk about Elie Tolvanen is that he's only 21 years old. We've been talking about him for such a long time that he feels older than that, but he's only 21 years old. And yes, his career to date, his professional North American professional career, has not lived up to the, you know, the incredible expectations that were placed on him, that he created with his great season in the KHL, in the Olympics, and the World Juniors before coming to Nashville a few years ago. But he still has a lot of room to grow. And the one thing that you cannot take away from Elie Tolvanen is that shot. I mean, that is some. I remember talking to Carl Taylor, the head coach of the Milwaukee Admirals, last season when I went to visit. It was about a calendar year ago. It's time has flown when we were still allowed to like go places. He said, like, I'm not going to teach him how to score. Like, his job is to refine the other parts of his game, but no one can teach Elie how to score, because that ability is top notch. And you saw that last night. And with this team near the bottom of the league and scoring, as you mentioned, you know, what can it hurt? I mean, I think it would be appropriate to get some of these younger players in the lineup. Get, you know, we've seen Matthew Olivier. We've seen Yakov Trenin, though their roles are different than that of Elie Tolvanen. But get some of those players in the lineup. Just give them an opportunity. I mean, it can't hurt. There are certainly players who are in the lineup right now that are not producing like they should and perhaps would benefit from a game off. That's just my opinion. But I don't think it would hurt to give Elie Tolvanen some more playing time.
I mean, I know what Kalle Järnkrok is. When he comes back from injury, I'm not exactly dying to see Kalle Järnkrok back in the lineup. I know what Brad Richardson is. Same with him. Again, they're 27th in the league in scoring. At some point, you also have to find out what you have in Elie Tolvanen. He can't just be this mystery box always sitting there, not knowing what he's going to be at the NHL level. He either has it or he doesn't. And whether or not he has it at age 21 could be unfair because we've been talking about him for so long. But if he can help you score, I think he has to be in the lineup, even though he might have some defensive deficiencies.
Yeah, and the thing that you need to do is you need to protect him. You need to put him on a line where he gets a lot of offensive zone opportunities. You need to put him in that position. You need to give him a lot of power play time. Put him in as many offensive zone situations as you possibly can. So you don't you shelter a player like Elie Tolvanen. You're not giving him defensive zone starts. You're not putting him, you know, on the line that's matched up against the other team's top line. You're trying to get him softer matchups, whether that's a third or fourth line or a lot of offensive zone starts. I mean, I think about like Kevin Fiala a few years ago. I mean, I don't have his numbers in front of me, but he basically started 75% or more of his shifts in the offensive zone at 5-on-5. Like, that's what you need to do with Elie Tolvanen. Just force feed him those offensive zone starts, the soft matchups, the power play time. You don't, you know, if he has to almost turn into like a specialist, that would be fine too. You have to be careful.
No doubt about it. So that's going to be something interesting to watch. Elie Tolvanen playing last night in his first game this season, and also scoring in his first game this season, even though at times it did look like he was kind of floating out there, not really knowing where he was going, but he scored. And this team doesn't have a lot of finish. And if there's one thing that Tolvanen does have, and it's that shot where he can finish offensively. So this team, Adam, 4-5 through 9 games. I can sense a whole lot of frustration from the fan base after 9 games, even after 2 games where clearly they were not the better team against the Tampa Bay Lightning, nor should they have been expected to be the better team against the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I'm sensing a lot of angst from the fan base, and I know you're getting the brunt of that on Twitter. I'm curious from your point of view what the fan base's expectations really should be versus what they seem to be right now.
Yeah. It's an interesting dynamic because we knew, I think we could, well, maybe we knew is not the right answer, but we knew that that this team, or we had a sense that this team was going to struggle, or was going to be a mediocre team. Let's put it that way. We knew this team was going to be a middle of the pack team. This team is not a Stanley Cup contender. I think most people who watch this team, and even people around the league, would tell you that this is not a Stanley Cup contending team on paper. And yet, as the Predators have been losing games, or even games that they've won, I mean, in the Chicago game early on, before they were able to tie the game, the first Chicago game, and Roman Josi won it in overtime, and I wrote about this last week, my Twitter timeline, my mentions, read like a greatest hits compilation of Predators fan grievances, ranging from Roman Josi's fitness to be captain, to John Hines's coach, to David Poile as GM, to Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene, as we discussed. I mean, I think I even got a James Neal mention in there. Oof. I mean, people need to move on. That was four years ago almost. Give me a break. Anyway, this is what I mean, jokingly, I said to people, if you lower your expectations, you'll never be disappointed. But really, as you're watching this team, I mean, no one has been able to tell me why this is different than what they've been expecting when I've talked to Predators fans on social media and in the comments section of my articles on The Athletic. You know, some have said, well, I figured they would be average, but I didn't expect them to look this bad. Okay, that's one thing. But the expectations for this team need to be recalibrated. This is not a championship team right now. They are not going to win. They are not going to win the Stanley Cup this year. They may not even make the playoffs this year. I think they'll figure it out. I mean, I have strong enough confidence that they'll sneak into the playoffs. But they may not. Making the playoffs is not an inevitability for this group. So I get it, Predators fans. You're mad. You're disappointed. You feel like you were sold a false bill of goods when this team went to the Stanley Cup final in 2017, won the President's Trophy in 2018. Now those glory days, those supposed glory days, have come and gone. They did not win a championship, and now they're sort of stuck in the uncomfortable middle, the mushy middle, as I said earlier, with no clear vision to move forward. I get all of that. But there's nothing that's going to come out of this season, in season, that's going to change all of that. So I feel like expectations need to be recalibrated.
Preds have a pretty big back-to-back coming up on Thursday night. We'll get to that on the other side. Plus, how would we assess the goaltending situation through nine games? How would we assess what the Central Division looks like through nine games? All of that's coming up next year on Preds Insiders, brought to you every week by Dr. Kelly Rice. For all your dental or sleep apnea needs, visit KellyERice.com. This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into Preds Insiders right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Ryan Porth joined by Adam Finken of The Athletic here this evening. The Preds and Panthers coming up Thursday and Friday nights, both games. The face-off is at 6 p.m. with pregame starting at 5 right here on your home of the Nashville Predators, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Adam, before we get to the importance of that two-game set, I do want to get your thoughts on how you feel like UC Saros and Pecorine have been playing so far this season.
You know what? I think they've been fine. They haven't been great by any stretch. You know, the problem is with all of the discussions that we've had about this team's lack of goal scoring, they need Pecorine and UC Saros to be lights out, and they haven't been that. I'm looking at their stats right now. UC Saros, a 2.82 goals against and a 9.08 save percentage in six starts. Pecorine, a 3.31 goals against average and an 8.69 save percentage in three starts. Yes, 6-3. There we go. Pecorine, of course, has made four appearances. He did come in relief in one game. So, you know, you look at some of their underlying numbers, they aren't great either. If the Predators are going to be a team that relies on defense and goaltending to win because they can't score, they need their goaltenders to be their best players, and they haven't been. That is not to say that this is entirely their fault. It is a team sport after all. But if this is how the Predators are going to win games, they need better goaltending from both of those guys.
Well, in years past, when this team has struggled to score, Pekarinen bailed them out a lot. A lot more often than what Saros or Rene are doing or can do in present day. And, you know, I've made this comment multiple times. I kind of feel like UC Saros at this point, if the team plays well in front of him, he's going to have a good game. If the team doesn't play well in front of him, he may not have a good game. And there aren't that many starts that UC Saros makes where he ends up bailing the team out. I feel like Pekarinen has been playing better than what the numbers show this season. But again, he's not at the level that he was, you know, 2, 3, 4 to 10 years ago where he could do that on an almost nightly basis. So that's where the offensive struggles, you know, really, really go under the microscope even further.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I think Pekka and UC have played well enough that the Predators have been able to at least attempt to come back in these games. But as we were saying before, unless they get lights out goaltending and play above expectation, the Predators, if they can't score, are in trouble.
So Preds Panthers coming up Thursday and Friday nights. And look, the Preds have another 2-game set against Tampa Bay on the horizon early next week, Monday and Tuesday at Bridgestone Arena. So these games against the Florida Panthers on Thursday and Friday nights are big. And the Florida Panthers have been good this season. They are 5-0-1 to start this young season. That is tops, you know, around the Central Division, even though they've played for tied for the least amount of games. They are tied for the most points in the Central Division because they have not lost yet in regulation. Florida could be a sneaky good team. We'll see if this is just a mirage to start the season or whether Quenneville has this team playing at a higher clip for the rest of the year. But I feel like this is a pretty important 2-game set, Adam, where it's a back-to-back. You know, Saros will get one game, Rene will get the other. You're coming off two disappointing losses to the Lightning, where there were times where you did not look good at all. This is an important 2-game set upcoming for the Preds to not only respond, but to get some points.
Yes, and we should mention that the Panthers are the only team in the league without a loss in regulation after the Washington Capitals blew a 3-0 lead and lost to the Boston Bruins last night. So the Panthers at 5-0-1, the only team without a blemish in regulation. Old friend Patrick Hornquist leads the team in goal scoring with 5. Alexander Barkov, 2 goals, 5 assists for 7 points. Jonathan Huberdeau also has 7 points. So they, unlike the Predators, are getting that top play, that good play from their top players. You know, the problem last season for the Panthers was their goaltending, and Sergei Bobrovsky hasn't really been that great this season either. He started 3 games. He has a .287 goals against average and .894 save percentage. You know, he hasn't gotten off to a great start, but the Panthers have been able to score and they've been getting contributions from their top players, which the Predators wish they could do. So these are 2 big games. We talked about the teams that they should beat, the teams that they should hang around with, the Predators, that is. And the Panthers are a team that, you know, are 3 points ahead of the Predators. They've played 3 fewer games, but you need to close that gap as much as you can. So getting 4 points in these 2 games would be really, really helpful.
I looking at the schedule in more than just the next 2 games, you have 2 against Florida on the road, and then you return home next week with 2 against Tampa and 2 against Detroit. I look at these next 6 games before you have to go back to Dallas the following week. These next 6 games, I think we're going to learn a lot about this team. How do they respond against Florida? How do they play a second time against Tampa Bay? And can they take care of business at home against the lowly Detroit Red Wings? I am really curious to see how this Preds team reacts in these next 6 games. If they don't respond well, I fear that this season that they're going to dig themselves too big of a hole that they can climb out of if they don't respond well in these next 6 games. So
yeah, I agree.
Especially when you look at the Central Division, looking at it as a whole, I mentioned how Florida is tied at the top with 11 points, Tampa Bay, Columbus also with 11 points. Columbus has played 3 more games than Tampa, 4 more games than Florida. So Tampa seems to be the class of the division. Carolina at 5-1 with 10 points. They look really good. Dallas, outside of that first game in Carolina, I believe it was Friday night, Dallas has looked pretty strong to start the season, even without Tyler Seguin and Ben Bishop. This Central Division might be better than what we had expected, especially if Columbus starts, or I should say continues to play better ever since they got the Pierre-Luc Dubois drama out of their own building.
And Patrick Laine, by the way, making his Blue Jackets debut tonight.
Correct.
So they just got tougher too. And the Predators have plenty of history with Patrick Laine, so they know what he is capable of. So this division, you're right, Ryan. I think a lot of people expected this, you know, perhaps to be the worst of the four divisions. But there have been some surprises. I mean, if you would have told me that the Panthers would be the last team in the league without a regulation loss, I would have, you know, I'm not a gambling man, but I would have put a significant sum of money on that. And the Predators absolutely need as many points as they can in these next six games.
So let's close out the show like this. Shea Weber spent a considerable amount of time in a Preds uniform. He played 763 games in a Preds uniform. He was drafted in this city when the draft was here in 2003, the illustrious 2003 NHL draft. And tonight with the Montreal Canadiens, Shea Weber plays his 1,000th NHL game, already underway in Vancouver. And I just want to spend a couple minutes, Adam, at the end of the show and just acknowledge Shea Weber and congratulate Shea Weber for this achievement. I know he's gone through some injuries in the last handful of years that could have derailed the 1,000th game ever from happening. But Shea Weber, the consummate pro, a great leader for this Preds team for many years, and it's great to see him not only get to 1,000, but also still playing at a good level.
Yes. You know, I am a big fan of Shea Weber. It's a great accomplishment. I mean, consider a couple of years ago, you know, he was dealing with some significant injuries, was missing a lot of games. If I recall correctly, before the season was paused last year, he was on pace to play game number 1,000 in Nashville.
He was.
Which would have been incredible. Just think about, you know, when he returned to Nashville for the first time with the Canadiens, what a great moment that was. One of the few times I've seen, you know, some semblance of tears coming from Shea Weber's eyes. I didn't realize that statues could cry until that moment. But I wrote a story, you know, about a year and a half ago. I think it was the beginning of last, I think it was in January of last season. No, it might've been two seasons ago rather, about Shea becoming captain of the Canadiens and how fitting that was. I mean, considering the kind of player he is, the lineage and history of the Montreal Canadiens, it just made so much sense for him to become the captain. They love him up there. I remember how upset fans were in 2016 when they traded, Canadiens fans rather, when they traded PK Subban. I think they've learned to love Shea Weber, you know, a class act, you know, to borrow the cliche. Still has a ton of fans here in Nashville. You know, I really enjoyed my time covering him and getting to know him. It's a great accomplishment. So congratulations to Shea. He obviously can't hear this because he's playing and he's also in another country. Not that you can't access the 102.5 game app from Canada.
You can stream 102.5 the game from everywhere in the world.
There you go. So it doesn't matter that he's in Canada, but he's currently playing. So maybe he'll pop on the podcast after he's done, you know, cooling down from a milestone game and he'll hear this. So you're welcome, Shea.
I'm sure he will do just that. All right, Adam, that's all the time we have here this evening for Preds Insiders. I appreciate your appearance as always. Good stuff as always. And we'll see how this Preds team progresses from here on out.
Yes, Ryan, thank you so much for having me.
For Adam Vinken, I'm Ryan Poore. Thank you so much for listening to Preds Insiders this evening. We'll have Preds Panthers right here on these airwaves coming up both Thursday and Friday nights on ESPN 102.5 The Game.